Welcome back to another episode of Beyond the Crops. We're super excited for this week's episode.
We are excited. It's been a while since we've had our husbands join the pod. So Josh and Levi are with us.
Glad to be here.
It's harder than you might think to get... It's for just for Mary Pat and I, we can usually make our schedules align, but then to make our husband's schedules align for a time to do this is actually harder than one might think.
Yeah, Josh was already asleep. I had to pry him out of bed from...
Very busy sleep schedule this time of year. Crop.
I was in the field.
But Levi came home to eat, of course, and then he says to do the podcast too. But let's be honest, Levi was coming home for supper, everybody.
I do not miss meals.
What was for supper?
Chicken and rice soup and this amazing sourdough bread. I had four pieces.
Oh, man.
Literally half the loaf is gone. It's like, well, that was okay. Back up. Y'all, Mary Pat does not even know this yet. I never shared it on social media. For the very first time ever, Levi packed a lunch and took it to the field. I packed a lunch and Levi took it to the field.
And the worst thing is, it was like the first full day of fertilizing. First full day, I'm packing a lunch. Not a good
sign.
No
one feels sorry for you.
Bad start.
And what did you say?
I'm concerned about the corn price. If my year's starting like this, it's downhill.
But what did you say? You called me at lunch.
She left me a nice note. Aww. in the lunchbox, and it was like a deluxe lunchbox packing. Like
it was a cooler, y'all. Like a big cooler. It wasn't a lunchbox.
I had a full gallon of water, half of it being like this
salty water.
Yeah, salty water. Half being regular. I had oranges, apples, two flavors of chips.
Whoa.
Two kinds of meat.
A big chicken salad. It was like a big salad with chicken and steak.
And steak. And
anyways, let's cut to the chase. You didn't die.
It was good.
Okay, but now Jenna's packing you like these immaculate lunches and I'm over here like, get something out of the freezer.
So I got bread from our friend because I said, I told Levi that this fertilizing planting season, it is not feasible for me to bring him lunch every day because history would show that planting season is where I hit my all-time lows and I'm running around ragged for him, which is fine. And I'm like, I think we can just ease some of the stress if you just pack a lunch some days. And so I got him this bread from our friend so that he would have could do sandwiches and stuff. And then he ate half of the loaf tonight. And tomorrow I'm going to be gone because Stetson has a field trip and I'm driving for it. And he already lined up his dad to get his mom to bring him a hot meal. And I said, just so you know, to his dad, I went grocery shopping and he has all the food he needs to pack the lunch.
Sounds like a forward thinker to me.
I didn't know that she went behind my back and did that.
That takes a lot of organizing.
I mean, if he's lining up hot meals, more power to him.
I am very food driven and like, I tell you what, like come like 8:30, 9:30, like I know where lunch is coming from and where it's, you know, I got to have a plan. I'm looking for an exit strategy. Pow, pow. Like,
would you ever try a heated lunchbox? Because I feel like that maybe changed Josh's life.
I did bring that up to him, but Josh, give Levi some encouragement.
It sounds like you had it good, so it sounds like it's only downhill. going from a cold sandwich to a nice hot lunch, that's nice. It's nice to have a hot meal.
Yeah. I'm a little scarred. I went to grade school at this really tiny school and we had to pack a lunch every day. In the 90s.
Oh.
And thermoses were not like they are now. I think I could hear mine shake like the glass was broken in it. So like everything was cold.
That he's lying, you
soggy.
Guys. Soggy. They had crock pots and you could bring leftover food wrapped in foil and then you can put it in a crock pot and then you can still have warm food. Don't be dramatic.
Jenna, 90s, they didn't have the crock pot system at that school. I was there. You weren't.
I don't believe you.
He's just trying to heal his inner child.
I know. No one feels bad for him.
And Jenna's like, nobody in the whole world, no one in the whole world gets hot, nice meals like you do during planting and harvest. So I hope every listener that is going to hear this podcast, please write Jenna and MP and tell them how your husbands get all these fabulous meals in the field because she needs to know that this does happen. This is normal. Like, good food to your hardworking husband in the field is normal.
Gonna be crickets in the DMs, well, best friend.
We get hot meals.
Yeah, but you get the evening meal. You don't get lunch, which it's like for us, it's breakfast, lunch, dinner. I know people call it different things, but
I call it breakfast, lunch, dinner. Levi's family calls it breakfast, dinner, supper.
Yeah, get you some supper.
Yeah, so they get the hot dinner or your supper, but lunch is, I mean, now Josh's lunches are hot too, but before they were cold.
Yeah.
So, delivery is at dinner time, not during lunchtime for us.
But that, you don't do that during planting, yeah, do you?
It actually gets a lot more complicated because then they're not all in the same field. And
right. Oof,
but
I'm telling you, planting is not for the faint of heart. It is a hard season.
It's faster-ish, but like it's more stressful mm-hmm. because you have smaller planting windows and you just have to do the work when you can.
And I just feel like harvest has all this camaraderie and hype and it's like a teamwork and all hands on deck, and planting's just like, well, good luck, farmer. Like, you're out there in the field by yourself.
That's true. And whenever there's a breakdown, if somebody broke down here and then another guy's broke down in another field, you only have so many people who can scoot around to help everyone.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's where these good wives come into play.
Yeah, you men are blessed. Yeah. Anyways, this episode is supposed to be about tillage and field work, which...
So speaking of, Josh, give me a little rundown how things are there. Compare it to last year. Like, you know, got more done? Are you wetter? Are you drier? You know?
Whoa. Yeah. This point in the season, I mean, we have more done, but it happened a month ago. So
February.
There was a good week. We didn't plant anything. We got field work done, but...
I remember seeing that. I was like, you psychos, get out of the field. What are you doing?
And we're all standing there with our arms up like, well, it's fit. So.
I texted you the day before. I was supposed to be packing for Commodity Classic, but I took Harper out to the field to do some tillage because we had the chance. So,
uh-huh.
Yeah, it was fun.
We had cows on all of our fields, so that was not a thing for us.
But now it's like really wet.
Yeah. I mean, we've had, I bet, close to 5 inches in the last week and a half.
Yeah.
Really, really wet right now. Ooh. So
flooding.
Ponds overflowed and probably the wettest it's been for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow.
We are being taught patience currently.
We were planting. Uh-huh. Well, I definitely have videos of us planting April 13th last year. And we've definitely planted before now. The year before, was it? April 1st?
21.
Okay.
21, we were planting the Monday after Easter. We got to do that again.
So
that was a practice round because we had to replant a bunch. So
yeah. Oh, probably a good thing.
Yeah.
We're wet right now. But what about you guys?
We're a trickle wetter than last year. We've got maybe
Which would take nothing to be wet.
70 hunterts this spring versus nothing. We did get a little snow in January and
we got a lot of snow in January.
Like 25 inches.
But the problem was it blew so hard and it drifted so hard, hardly any snow stayed in the field.
Oh, just went all to the ditches.
Welcome to Nebraska.
Yep.
And yards.
Yeah.
And roads and where you don't want it.
Yeah. But anywhere it was flat, it didn't stay because it would just blow across it.
Yeah.
No, we kind of the same way. We could have been out doing some things in the field like February-ish, March, like most of March here and there, you know, outside of a few cold days or a skid of snow here, there, or whatever. We just started fertilizing here Tuesday. We just got about 3,500 of rain and snow on last, I don't know, Thursday or something. So, but it's really dry now. It's working good. We're dry. I mean, dry, dry, dry. Like speaking of tillage, like I've seen deep tillage, you know, reduced tillage or no tillage at all raise good crops. But for us around here, I do not touch my dry land acres with any tillage at all, just trying to save and conserve moisture. I will say on, you know, if you're trying to get some early beans planted or something like super early, like, you know, now early, that it's good to do some fall tillage because that ground will be just a shade drier come spring, versus, you know, a no-till field.
Levi just kind of jumped right into the tillage talk there. I was going to kind of prep the audience, but that's okay.
Well, they just got prepped.
So a quick overview, if you're new to farm life or just don't really know anything about tillage, because it is still very confusing to me. So Mary Pat and I are kind of going to bounce back and forth with our husbands about what we do on our operations, what it's called, because different areas call different practices different things, which I've learned by being friends with Mary Pat. And yeah, so there's conventional tillage, which Josh and Levi, why don't you give us a definition of conventional tillage?
I mean, this is my definition of conventional tillage, and it might vary for everybody, but what I've known or been brought up, like, conventional tillage is like maybe plowing or like disc chiseling or something like that. Like, you're really getting aggressive with the soil, like almost breaking up that soil structure. Like, we kind of like to say, like, hitting the reset button. Like, you got hard pan or you got something on a field, like, you're really working it up deep. And I like to, at some point in time, if I'm going to take an angle with that real deep tillage, I'll come back with a disc or a VT or something straight with my rows. I like my last pass to tillage be with the way I'm going to plant, so that planter is traveling as smooth as possible, like, you know, seed bed wise and things like that.
So if you were disking a field, you might go the opposite direction first.
Well, you see a lot of, when you disc, like, take an angle just to get the roots out better and all that kind of thing, which is fine for that first initial pass. But my last pass, or if I'm only going to make one pass, I will make it with the rows because I want it straight and I want it smooth and flat. And I just want that planter. I can't stress enough how important that planting pass is. And I want it all to just be smooth and flat with the way I'm going to plant it.
So what does conventional tillage look like for SAS Farm?
I would agree with what Levi has to say. You know, there's a, I'll call it a primary tillage pass, whether that's a disc or, you know, a chisel plow or disc ripper, whatever you want to call it.
Okay, let's pause there because you guys call it a chisel plow. We call it a disc chisel, but I've also heard disc ripper. I've heard Levi say that before.
And yeah, and
so are they the same thing or are they a little bit different?
They're really similar. Like, I've seen sometimes, like, it's a matter of just where the, like, so I've, like, different brands have, like, it's kind of like all same components, but, like, they're in different order. You know, I've seen both disc gangs a front of it, then the chisel point, like the chisel points in the back, like, you know, so it's just, I mean, it's just all different brand. I mean, it's all, they're all essentially doing the same thing. Now, that is not standard
doing
practice.
Doing the same thing, like that big,
the
turn
deep,
up of the soil.
Yeah, making it really black behind you. Like, really resetting the soil. Like,
okay.
And that's, I maybe only do one quarter, 180 that way a year. You know, I don't do a lot of that.
So what makes you want to do that on a field? Like, what's going on where you're like, I need a reset here?
Yeah, yeah. So maybe I'll, you know, grit it and I'll spread dry fertilizer or lime it or something. And I really want to get that incorporated and mixed throughout the soil profile. So that's a good time to do that pass. I'm not out there just doing that on every acre every year. Now, sometimes I'm not going to speak for Josh, but I know you guys seem to do a lot more heavy tillage. And I don't know, is that to, like, kind of dry your soils out a little bit? Or, like, I mean,
I guess it's to spread the tillage around. There's sometimes that we need to get into a farm and it's a little too wet. You know, under our high residue stuff, we definitely chisel plow that most of the time.
Yeah.
So there's, I guess, a little bit of variation in why we do it.
Only ever after corn.
Yep. Yep. I mean,
99%
of
the time.
Not a hard and fast rule, but yes, after corn.
And I would say, like, though, out of all of the different practices we do, even though it seems like a lot, it's still the least amount. Like, chisel plow or that deep tillage is still the least amount of all the rest of what we do.
Yeah, I'd say that's a quarter, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. We've moved a
lot. Yeah. Okay, so that's
strip till. We've moved a lot to vertical tillage. And I mean, there's a variety of reasons for that too. So,
mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. That would be considered reduced tillage, correct? The vertical tillage is strip till reduced tillage, or is that its own mm-hmm. category? Yep.
So, like, if you're looking at those programs where you can get credited for reduced tillage, both of those, like, would definitely fit that category.
It's just annoying when you've already been doing it, so then they won't pay you for it.
There are programs now that will. So things are looking up.
Awesome. Awesome. It's about time. So let's explain the vertical tillage, the VT, and the strip till to somebody who doesn't know what you guys are talking about.
Okay.
We don't strip till, so we'll let you take that one, Josh.
Oh, I like strip till. I could talk a while.
He's in love with a stripper.
So strip tillage, we have it custom done. We don't do it currently ourselves. So it's custom done by the co-op. So all you're doing is tilling a section of the, I'll call it, of the 30 inches. So we're roughly 8 inches. So you're only tilling that section. You're placing the fertilizer most of the time that you're placing the fertilizer right there. So
he's basically saying instead of tilling the whole field, you're tilling in 8-inch strips across the field
of where the seed bed will
correct.
Be.
Correct. And then we plant right on top of those strips. That section of the, I'll call it, of the acre or of the 30 inches, you're only tilling 8 inches of it. And you're banding your fertilizer right there. So reduced fertilizer cost, reduced fertilizer usage.
Yeah, because we can reduce it by what, 30% or more?
50%. So I think, I mean, we'll talk about precision, I guess. I think they've done studies that you can go up to, I think it's 50% with no yield loss. So. And we've really liked the fall strips as opposed to the spring strips, just preference. There's reasons for that too.
What was your reason for that? Why do you like the fall strips better?
More consistent moisture. We seem to have such a short window in the spring that the strips aren't as nice. So they get to overwinter and they smooth out a lot better. The planting conditions in the fall strips are a lot better.
Kind of like now you're sitting on 5 inches of rain. You're not strip tilling for weeks. Yep. I mean, you know, just being honest.
Depending on the strip till unit that you're using, you know, there's a shank involved in that as well. So you're going to have to go down 6 inches, 5-6 inches. And you don't really want to do that in the spring.
Levi, why don't you explain why we don't strip till?
Well, there's a lot of people in the area that do. I personally don't do it just for the fact that we get a lot of wind here and it seems like that corn's going to want to lean first.
Okay. The corn that's been strip tilled?
Yeah. That's what I've seen. And that's my, I mean, that doesn't always happen. And I'm, you know, I just.
You look at a lot of fields though. So
yeah,
that's a valid reason.
Yeah. And I don't know. I've been happy with the yields and what I've been doing. And I'd probably have to get a different tractor. If we did, you know, horsepower wise and those kinds of things.
Do you think the soil is looser in the, I mean, do you think that's why that you see stock issues or leaning issues?
Yeah, I mean, I do. And then we're known for like dry, 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 dry. And then you go plant a field, 3.5 inches tonight and it come in 5 minutes. And any little bit of hill, you got a whole pile of corn seeds in the draw and like that strip is all washed out. Like it's crazy. I've seen it countless times. I mean, as deep as you worked it will be completely washed out and all the seeds, I mean, no corn on the hillside whatsoever because that was a loose spot and the water took
that it. Just your guys' soil is so much different than ours. And even just the lay of the land, I know you say like it blows, it's like these flat fields and you do have flat field, but compared to us, like you have a lot more hills and draws and stuff than we do. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say for like every nice, beautiful flat field around here, there's one that's not, you know, and like, or obviously four. You get into like a, you know, areas that are like flatter and then areas that are hillier, you know, and it might not be a crazy hill, but any sort of a hill or terrain and you get a good rain and water going and it's going to find that loose spot. And so, I mean, but a guy that has 1,000 acres of nice flat field, I think it's a great option. You know,
so we don't strip till. Why don't you say what we do?
So what we do, like on my corn on corn acre, I'm a big proponent of grazing cattle on at heart. I want to clean up all the volunteer corn, you know, any ears or anything that got missed. I want them to eat a bunch of that, you know, eat a bunch of the trash. I like how they make the nutrients more available by running it through their rumen. Mm-hmm. And then I'll come in there with just a old Bessler steel stock chopper and just all that's really doing is just kind of, if the ground's hard, just kind of breaking it up. You know, I'm knocking some root balls out and everything. And then right behind that, I'm bringing in that Kuhn Kraus accelerator. It's like a VT machine. So it's vertical tillage, and it gets that name because the blades are like, they're not at a heavy pitch like a disc. Like they're maybe, I think ours is adjustable from like 1 to 5 degrees. So it's just kind of running more, you know, straight. And it really does a nice job at behind that stock chopper, just preparing a seed bed. I really like it and have done, you know, raised some good yields.
So do you stock chop and so corn on corn, but then you VT every acre that will be planted to corn?
And actually, no, some old bean ground I won't. I will some, I won't some. I mean, it just depends. There's a lot of things that depend and factors that play into it. But I wanted to add one more thing about the corn on corn acre. My ultimate corn on corn acre is harvest it, graze it hard, stock chop it, I'll liquid fertilize it, and I'm putting this liquid fertilizer 3 inches on each side of where I'm going to plant, okay? And then I run that accelerator and I throw that fertilizer around a little bit. I'm making so many more points of contact. So I'm like a poor man strip tiller because I'm putting my fertilizer in the 6-inch band, you know, and then I'm using the VT machine to like fluff and like move it around. I'm not 6 inches deep like you guys are talking about the strip till, but like I am a really big proponent of running that VT and just like it just moves that soil around, and that little band of fertilizer is now like a, you know, like a, it's in a couple inches, you know, and I was kind of all mixed around and it just seems work perfect. It doesn't burn the corn. It's just, I don't know. I've had really good luck with it.
Sounds good. Like a good system to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, we had that same, we've had that. We just traded the Kuhn Kraus for a different tool, but yeah, I suppose the difference between the, do you want me to explain the difference between? So the Kuhn Kraus is more like a mover and a shaker instead of like a flipper.
Flipper.
This is the terminology we needed, guys. What'd like, that's get? What is understandable.
Yeah, I'm trying to explain, like, you know, the disc ripper, you're flipping things over. You're really being aggressive. The VT is probably the least form of tillage. You know, like we said, 1 to 5 degree, that's almost nothing. Those are straight blades. They're like a wavy coulter, pretty much.
Yeah.
And it kind of shakes it. Like if you had weeds, you could probably uproot some, but not.
They got to be small. Yeah. They got to be small.
So it's.
Would you go with, would you trade the Kuhn Kraus in for?
Salford VRT. It's okay.
Say that again.
Salford.
In English.
Salford VRT. It's a Halo VRT. So it looks like a high speed disc.
What does VRT stand
for? Variable rate tillage.
Okay.
So it goes from, I think, 0 to 15 degrees. So we'll see how it goes. I'm excited about it.
Have you used it much?
Right. My brother ran it. So it was pretty good. We were working some chisel plowed ground with it, and it wasn't covering its own tire tracks like I thought it should have. There's huge, huge tires in the middle. They're like 800s. So they're wide. They make a really big impression. Wasn't covering them.
So would you do that more on like a harder soil rather than chisel plow?
Yeah. So we're going to run that on mostly beans going to corn, because then you don't have those hibs and valleys from the chisel plow.
Dang. Now I already know that I want that job.
I will just add with tillage, like tillage can be really beneficial or it can be detrimental to a farm. Like it's got to be done at the right time and the right moisture. Like it's kind of a big decision.
Speaking of moisture, I know why you don't till the dry land acres, but why don't you explain why?
Yeah. So I do not do any tillage on the dry land acres. Just A, there's less trash and residue on a dry land acre.
Especially on a year like.
Especially around here when your corn makes 20.
Oh my God. Like nothing left.
So, you know, that's not an issue to get through for planting because there's just a lot less, you know, material out there. And then my biggest thing is we put 15 to 20 bushel on our AP or on dryland APH by just not touching it, not tearing it open at all, losing that, you know, that little bit of moisture might not seem like much, but it adds up throughout the year. And if you can just let that ground sealed off with whatever little bit of residues on top, is gives us our best chance for our best yield. Water is our limiting factor on our dry land here every single year. Mm-hmm.
So when you're planting that, going from your irrigated to dry land, do you have to switch up a bunch of stuff on the planter if you like used a different tillage practice, or how does that go?
That's a great question. So I've got my irrigated worked up pretty nice, you know, and I've got my row cleaners just set, you know, enough to just move a little bit, you know, of any clods or big pieces of trash. And when I get to the dry land, it, you know, I really don't have to change the settings is what I'm getting at. It does a nice job in both, but you know, like I said, that dry land has so much less residue on it than compared, you know, if I'd leave the irrigated, I'd never be able to get through it with my trash cleaners just going no-till, because it's just so, you know, we're talking 280, 90 bushel corn to, I think our dryland APH is like 140-ish, you know, so, and last year it was 20.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just so much less to move that, you know, it's just going to work.
Do you no-till anything else or just the dryland acres?
I will no-till, I'll go in no-till on like old bean ground. And
so bean ground, that's now going to be corn.
Yep.
Okay.
And I've had good luck doing that. Not always, but it just really depends on the field and the soil type and how wet it is. Cause I like to bring that accelerator, that VT machine in there on that bean ground, and it makes a really nice seed bed doing that. But it's like, if it's just a ever so slight moisture wet, you can run that. And then that ground turns hard on top. Honestly, when I'm fertilizing it, I'm like making that decision like, okay, I'll be able to no-till this, or man, this probably should get the VT, or, you know, so I'm just kind of making those decisions as I fertilize.
Why don't you talk about cultivating a little bit, because we...
Field cultivating?
Yeah, and why we did it in February this year. Like, what was the push to get out there earlier?
Yeah, so kind of the same idea as why we like the strip till and the stale seed bed, or the fall strip till and the stale seed bed. You know, you don't have as, I'll call it dry soil and fluffy soil to plant into. You have I'll say the furrow has more integrity that you're planting into. So you don't get dry soil falling next to your seed, trying to get it to germinate at the same time.
So is the field cultivator like a mover and shaker?
So that's, how do I explain it?
It's more aggressive
like a big
than a
rake. Yeah. That's yeah. A good way to to explain it. And some of them have discs in the front. I call those discovators. I don't know what you guys call those, but there would be a set of discs in the front, whether they be straight or concave. And then there's a whole bunch of sweeps is what we call them.
A lot of people call them shovels, yep. Though.
Shovels or diggers. I think they call them in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, I'm not a real big fan of those, even though that's the way we still do it. And a lot of people still do it that way. I think it causes a layer of compaction and kind of I'll call it a smear layer. So roots have a tough time going through them. Not a tough, but I'll say it's a resistance layer.
I will totally agree with you on any tillage I'm doing. If I can get a big rain on it and like, you know, really settle that ground, and then you almost, you know, then with the sun and the next several days, you almost kind of get that, the ground almost reseals off. Mm-hmm. And then if you can plant on top of that, like that's, like you said, the ground's firm, there's good moisture underneath. It's just, that's ideal. Yeah.
If we don't like it, then why do we still do it?
What do you mean?
Like if you don't like that, what it does, then why do we still do it?
Because we still chisel plow.
Okay. So it has to be to smooth out what the chisel plow has done.
Yeah, I mean, some people use the accelerator to smooth out chisel plow. I don't think it's aggressive enough.
Yeah, my disc chisel like does a pretty good job of leaving it with, because of that set of disc blades are in behind the chisel points and then the harrow. So, but it is not planting ready. But I have to sock my accelerator in as deep as it'll go in the fall, and then it's best if I hit it again in the spring. So like if I truly want to get the the chisel plow or disc chisel marks or, you know, ruts or whatever you want to call it out, it probably needs two shots of the VT machine.
So the why we do it early is we don't have to work it again 5 inches deep. So when we're getting into the field in the spring, we want to be pretty early. So we're only planting it, say, 2 inches, 2.5 inches, and we don't have to work it again. Does that make sense?
Mm-mm. Sorry.
Did I make sense at all with that?
Yeah. I got it.
So we work in February, right? It's getting rained on. It's getting weathered right now.
Yes.
So now, as soon as it gets dry enough at 2.5 inches.
Oh, gotcha.
And it's fit at 2.5 inches or three, we're good.
Because otherwise you have
to
wait.
To go. Otherwise we gotta
got it.
You know, otherwise we have to wait until it's fit at 4 inches, 5 inches, however deep you think your field cultivator is gonna go, so you don't get those root balls that you're planting into.
That makes sense.
So
clear. I understand now as well.
The light bulbs have come on.
I don't know why tillage is so
complex too, because not complex, but everybody has a different view of it. Everybody has
and a different name for the same damn piece of equipment.
Yeah, and
that's
everyone,
frustrating when you don't know.
It is also just very different in like pretty small regions. Like when I grew up in Wisconsin and in the hills, my dad never tilled the hills, but he definitely chisel plowed the low ground. Like it's just all over the board different. And the only reason I know anything is because that's like something that I've been doing. I wouldn't have known. I never knew the names of the pieces of tillage until I got put in them.
Well, and to be fair, in the last 10 years, the list has quadrupled.
That's true.
I mean, it used to just be a disc, a field cultivator, and a ripper. Now everybody's got all different twists and spinoffs and this and that and everything.
When we were dating once, my parents asked what Levi was up to, and I... this is embarrassing. I said, I think he's flossing. And they said, what? I'm like, yeah, I swear. There's like a flosser and then it like lays that grass down and then they bale it. And my parents were like, is he swathing? I swear he said flossing.
Wow. Best friend. We've come a long way.
We have
come
a long way. I love that.
Yeah.
Look at you now. You've got an ag podcast. And
I know. Who would have ever thought that?
Yeah. So cool.
So we kind of want to leave our listeners with some encouragement going into the planting season. I don't know where you guys want to go with this, but whether it's like communication with each other or encouragement for themselves going into the busy season, but take that nugget and go with it wherever you please.
Oh, I like that. I love nuggets. I'll take off. I'm going to go on a limb here and say that you probably have a lot of farm wife listeners. Could I be correct with that statement?
You are correct.
Okay. So all you farm wives out there tuning in, I would just say, I mean, this is easier said than done, because in the fire of it, it all is tough. Like, it's very tough planting in spring season. A lot of times I got so much on my mind and Jenna's like, what's wrong? Like, I'm just thinking
that you don't say that. You're like, no, nothing. I'm fine.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm fine. Because I am. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm just thinking. I'm just like, I'm not only thinking about today. I'm thinking about at the end of planting, like what needs going to need sprayed first. Like, do I have to water chemical in? Like, I'm thinking,
when
I'm thinking
I go fishing?
12 hours out and I'm thinking 2 months out at the same time. So my only advice to all you good farm gals, wives, fiance, or
women,
girlfriends, just be patient and encouraging and like, hey, is there anything, how can I help you today or for an hour? Could I bring you a meal? Could I move you a vehicle to the field so you can get home at night? Could I just, what could I do to help? And maybe there's nothing, but just throw it out there like, hey, I just know sometimes when Jenna's like, hey, what can I do to help? And I'm like, oh, that's really nice. Like, let me think. Like, or maybe it's as easy as bringing a snack and a salty water or a Topo Chico to the field or something. You know, I don't know.
Did you just make up?
I'm on a, no, I'm on a Topo Chico kick. And
Topo Chico? The mineral water?
I call it Topo Chico. So kind of like disc chisel plow. This is my twist on it.
Do I need
so, yeah, it could.
Topo Chico? Sure.
Sounds like
them.
Tapioca pudding.
They're good.
It's literally sparkling water. But Levi is very partial to the Topo Chico brand. He's tried all of them.
It's got to be in the bottle. In the bottle, too. It's got the most pop.
Do you get this at Costco?
No. Unfortunately, Costco only carries the plastic bottles right now.
They'll probably be easy for you to find.
Yeah. So actually, they're hard to find where we live. And if you find them in a store, there's like one 12 pack left. So when my brother and sister-in-law came from Iowa a couple months ago, they brought us like 12 cases.
Wow. That's incredible.
We have one left.
Yeah. I also, this is my last thought, then I'm going to let someone else take over here real quick. I'm in my podcast season. I started fertilizing and, you know, the endless hours every day. And I've chosen to just do podcasts instead of radio. And yes, I am a listener of Beyond the Crops. But tell us your newfound love. I found a newfound love like 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, it's a deer hunting podcast. So
tell them what it's called.
Farm Wives. If you have husbands that like to hunt, you know, maybe pitch this to your husband. Like, hey, you know, just heard of this good. If they're hunters,
tell them what it's called.
I am. It's called Chasing Giants by Don Higgins and Terry Perry.
Ooh.
No, that's his name.
His name's Terry Perry.
Terry Perry.
Yep. And it's great. I really gotten into it. I like it a lot. And they had a really good like quote on there
nugget.
Today. Nugget on there today that I'm going to share here. And they said this was applying to deer hunting and what their wives allowed them to do and stuff. But they said like it applies to anything in life. Like, to really be successful and really good at something, it takes a spouse that is very supportive and behind you the whole way and encouraging. Because no matter what you do, that could be farming, you know, livestock, deer hunting, whatever. Like if your spouse is pulling in the other direction constantly, like it's really tough to be successful. So if they're encouraging and pushing the right direction, it just helps everything move the right way. So I really like that, and I wanted to pass that on. So that goes props to Don and Terry of Chasing Giants.
That was really good.
Terry Perry.
That was.
I don't know how we're going to tap that. So
I just want to add to Levi a little bit. I like that analogy about if the spouse is working against you. I feel like I've been very transparent on here about how hard planting season has been for me in the past. And I feel like I've worked really hard to switch my mindset and be ask Levi what he needs and just not, if he is going to be late or plans change, not get mad or worked up about it. And I've just been saying, I don't care what you have to do, Levi. I just need you to tell me what you need to do for the farm right now. Like, just tell me so I'm not pissed about it later because I didn't know about it.
And that's worked really well.
Yeah.
That's really good advice. I don't know. I think for me, the only thing that worked was being part of it because I felt such awful FOMO. And I was probably a much harder to work with wife before I was part of it. Would you agree?
I don't know. I don't.
He's pleading the fifth.
Far.
He's already.
No, I would say the last at least 2 years have been really good.
Yeah. What words of encouragement do you have for,
you know, Levi hit it on the head with patience. You know, I'll maybe have a lot of grace with each other and add communication in there too, because that helps. But I think you guys hit the main ones, because that is just, it's not a marathon, it's a sprint. And everybody's tired and everybody's doing the best they can. And, you know, I think when you realize that, and you just need to be working on the same team and nobody's trying to pull the other direction, hopefully, you know, the kids really, you know, it's really good to have them out and, you know, working with your spouse that way and having the kids out. Some of my favorite memories with our kids have been out in the field. So if you can make that happen, make it happen.
I think our dynamic has changed a lot, especially like last spring. But I do remember when I was not in the field as much and home, and I get really stressed when I'm home with my kids a lot, which is part of the reason why we have daycare a couple days a week to take off some of that pressure. And I remember you telling me, it must have been in the heat of the moment one spring, and you're like, I know it's hard, but can you just tell me like two good things that happened with the kids before you tell me all the bad things? And I was like, because obviously like you, the guys, like you feel bad too and want to help us, but can't. And there's like a, there's like this pressure of like not being there and whatever. So when I heard that from you and heard how like my, the way that I shared about my day was affecting him in the field and like just his overall mood, I was like, ooh, so me venting isn't actually going to help either of us. So, but by changing into that like positive habit, it really helped me look for the good things throughout.
Right.
Sure.
And that was really helpful to hear him communicate it and then for me to actually like put it into practice.
To add to, I guess, what you said and what I said is like, we only have so many chances to do this, which is tough to think about too. And we need to make the best out of it that we can. You know, seeing your kids' faces when they're digging for corn and they find a little seed out there, and you know, that is,
yeah,
like I say, it's just some of the best memories. And it's a hard time, but it's the best time too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, there's definitely more to life than farming, you know, like, you know, my mom always says your kids are the only thing you're going to take to heaven with you. Yeah. So, you know, but we sat here too long and now I thought of one other thing. So
perfect. You always tie the ribbon so nicely for us.
It's hard, always hard to get Levi off a podcast.
I know. I just love it. So how long have you guys been married?
Seven.
Since
2007.
Seven years.
Yep. Yep. So we're going to be nine.
In June this year,
and you guys will be eight. So just essentially you're behind us, and you would, I think you'll agree. And for any newlyweds or like maybe you're on year three, four, five, it definitely gets easier the long, like the more planning seasons you and your spouse go through. Like I would say it was maybe tough or rough through four or five, but maybe even six-ish, we started to figure it out, but now it's gotten so much better. So if don't stress, or if it is hard right now, it will get better. And give me your take, but I feel like we've really come a long way.
I agree, but I think you both have to commit to making it better, like better communication and listening to each other's needs and helping each other in any way that you can.
And working with each other, not against
each other. Right, exactly. I think it can, like you said, it could go one of two ways. Like you either, by year eight, nine, you're like, yeah, we're kind of in a good rhythm. We kind of have this figured out. Or you're like, this is getting worse and worse and worse, you know? So I don't know, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, another planting season. Here we go.
Yep.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
I agree. Well, should we wrap it up? All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode. And thanks you guys for coming on the podcast tonight. We appreciate you spending time with us.
Absolutely. I look forward to next time.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Be sure to subscribe and leave us a review.
See you next time.